I've started.
We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it didn't take that long again. Go dogs.
Man, it's not going to take that long. Come on, Kirby. Keep it real with the folks. Keep it real with the folks. Welcome back to 100 Sanford. It is your boy, Lamar Lovelace. I got Graham Coffee in the house. We got the Super G, Big George, getting ready to come on here in a little bit. Graham, what is going on? Welcome back. You were missing in action last week, but Merry Christmas, brother. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. It's good to be back.
What'd you do, man? You were traveling, right?
Yeah, I was on airplanes when you guys recorded last week. We went out to North Carolina, stayed with my folks for Christmas, and my sister and her two kids are right around the corner from my parents, like same neighborhood kind of thing. So got to do Santa Claus and all that good stuff. It's fun, man. It's fun being around the little ones at Christmas time. They're all fired up and ready to roll. So it was a good time.
You get hit up big time, man, because you're like, you know, the uncle with no kids. You're the uncle with like no kids.
Oh, yeah,
you
know, bro.
Like you're making money.
Yeah, and all that good stuff. Of course. Well, you know, I don't know about making money, but I got there, and the second morning I woke up, my mom's like, oh, yeah, there's a package out on the front porch. Check it out. And I'm like, all right, cool. And I go out there, and this thing's so big that the UPS guy didn't even bring it up on the porch. He left it down, yeah. You know, out in the yard, because it's like, you know, the size of a an F-250 or something. And thing weighed hundreds of pounds, and it was like a whole playset deal. And, you know, it was just like this casual, like, hey, be ready to put that together on Christmas Eve, which my dad, he is 70 now, but like he's worked out three times a week for the last, like, I don't know, 30 years. So like he's pretty built and jacked, and he's handy with tools. So I wasn't like totally in the wilderness on it, but it was a team effort. My wife got in there. She was sticking stickers on the Barbie Jeep. And, you know, we did enough of it on the days before Christmas Eve that we only had a couple things to do Christmas Eve night. And we actually got to bed at a decent time. But yeah, man, I mean, it's kind of like I get to put all the stuff together and do the work, but like, I'm not going to like get any of the credit down the road when the kids realize that Santa Claus, you know, is not a real thing, I guess.
Say he is.
Yeah, exactly, man. I do believe, you know, there's some sort of magic spirit at Christmas or whatever. So, you know, I'll refer to that as Santa Claus, I guess. But yeah, so I don't know. It's all the work with none of the glory, man. I know how like Big George feels being in the trenches, I guess.
Yeah, man. I told you before we even got started, you know, two out of the four people in my household got COVID. I'm free right now. So, but heck, man, I already know what it's like when those boxes come in. I still got stuff in the garage I haven't put together yet. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
heck yeah, man. Because I mean, he's got my son's quarantined up in his room. So he's got
like work. So y'all didn't even do like Christmas morning and all that.
No, we did all that. But what it is that like, he's got his own tree in his room because we had like extra trees. So, like, my oldest has a tree in his room. The youngest one has a tree in his room. You know, they wanted that kind of stuff. But then we put, you know, his presents underneath his tree. He opened up his stuff, you know. So he was all cool up there. He's having fun. But like, some of the bigger items, there's no sense. He can't even come downstairs yet. So there's no sense in me getting into the trenches and building things that I don't need to build. So, but it was still a cool time, man, you know. Then the wife caught it after Christmas, so. Now everybody's still quarantined, and me and the oldest holding things down here at the Lovelace household. But it's still Christmas, you know. We got the Christmas holiday going on, and New Year's going to be coming. So hopefully they'll be fine by New Year's. We can party, you know, do some things that we need to do. But until then, I'll hold
better
it
better late than never, my friend. Better late
exactly.
than never.
Exactly. Hey, before we go anywhere, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Like Big George would say, I think it's like right down there, the subscribe and like button. I don't know. Get the notifications. So when you know the new 100 Sanford podcast episode is coming up, you will get that message and you will be notified. Also, make sure you go over to Dog Central. Dog Central is blowing up. Now under the Players Lounge. I don't even know what to say about it. There's so much information that's coming. Graham, your stuff is blowing up on there. Obviously, you're writing for the Players Lounge now. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome information, but you're still going to get that great intel on Dog Central. You're still going to get the connections to the podcast, the network of people to talk to. I mean, Dog Central just blowing up. Also, make sure homefieldapparel.com. Now, I know you got some gift cards for Christmas. You got some things you want to get for 2024. You're getting excited. You got new recruits coming into Athens. Make sure you go over to homefieldapparel.com, get some new gear. Use the promo code 100 Sanford for 20% off your order. Get new gear. I got something right now I'm wearing. This is some home field apparel gear. Graham usually wears something, but make sure you get it. It's probably the best out there you're going to find. So head on over to homefieldapparel.com and make sure you get that new stuff. But we are here to talk about it is the Orange Bowl. It's Orange Bowl season. I call it the should have been there bowl for for both Florida State.
Almost and doesn't count, bowl, baby. That's what it is.
Yeah, man. Super G, what's going on? Can you hear us?
What up?
Merry Christmas, brother. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to all y'all, man. How was it?
Everything was good, man. Everything was good. You already know my plight, you know, with people with COVID. But Graham was letting everybody know, you know, what his situation was as he was being, you know, the elf, the Keebler elf over there building stuff for his neck. But hey, man, we're talking about the Orange Bowl. We're talking about the Orange Bowl, brother. It is here. It is now. Florida State, Georgia coming up December 30th. Capital One Orange Bowl, I guess that's what they call it. But it's the should have been there bowl. That's what I call it. What are y'all thoughts coming up on this bowl game against Florida State?
The almost doesn't count bowl.
The almost doesn't count bowl. How do I feel about it? Go win it. You know what I mean? Just make your statement. You know, everybody knows who the dogs were this year. You know, they didn't quite handle business, but you still have one last chance to let people know what the real deal was. You know what I mean? Go take care of business. You should take care of business. I think we have we'll have more talent on the field than the other team. So why not?
I think the reality of this game is it's kind of similar to some positions we've seen Georgia in the past under Kirby Smart, but it's even more pronounced this time. You're going to get zero credit for winning this thing for most people, but you sure as hell don't want to lose it. If you lose it, then people will talk about it for the next 8 months. I promise you. Because we saw that in the 2018 Sugar Bowl when Georgia lost to Texas. It was, what's wrong with Georgia? What's wrong with Georgia? And then, you know, that's a similar story, right? Like that. And I think that's where kind of the way Kirby approaches these non-CFP bowl games changed after that. But go win it, which is what you just said, George. That's exactly right. Go win it, because you sure as hell don't want to lose it, even though it's not gonna get you any of the credit that you want. It still matters in that sense. It's never fun in college football to lose a game, especially when you are a team like Georgia that's at the top of the heap, because everybody wants any excuse they can to take a bite out of you.
I think it's interesting that, you know, you brought up 18, Graham, because 18 was a year Texas thought that, you know, they were back.
They beat Georgia,
right? They beat Georgia in a bowl game where Georgia was actually, you know, really truly not interested. Guys were not interested in being there. They played like they weren't interested in being there. And then you look at Florida State, a team that looks like it's got a resurgence, a team that looks like they have been claiming and been stating, we're back. Right. And all of a sudden they get 20 guys that opt out. 20 guys with guys injured, with their, you know, their main signal caller injured, their backup quarterback who's now in the portal. You would think that you would get Florida State's best in this game, but obviously with 20 guys opting out and either in the portal, I don't know what you're going to get from this Florida State team. You got freshmen starting at quarterback. You got wide receivers that haven't taken snaps all year that are going to be out there, you know, on the edges. To me, it comes down to if Georgia were to lose this game, first of all, it'd be unprecedented. I think, what, we're 17, 18, 19-point favorite right now? Up.
It continues to climb. Somebody I know might have hit that spread when it was like 14, and now it's like 20 and a half, I think.
Right, and they should cover that spread. I mean, when you look at Beck playing, you know, you got all of Georgia's main – I think basically most of Georgia's starters have said they're going to play except for maybe Brock and Mims, who we haven't heard anything about. They were left back home, so to speak, to kind of work on some injuries. But I didn't think they were going to play anyway. These guys
– Mims is now in Miami, just so you know. He posted on Instagram like a couple hours ago that he was in Miami. I don't think he's playing, but he's down there.
Yeah.
I mean, but when you look at the guys that Georgia has on the roster and the guys that have stated they are going to play, you know, they're going to leave it on the field. They should be able to blow this team out. It should be one of those games where they execute at a high level, you know, get into the first half without any injuries or anything like that, get into the second half, and then you start to see some backups and some guys you want to see from the 24 season really get some reps and see what they can do in a game like this. But you never know. That's the whole key. Are these guys interested in playing? Are they truly interested in playing? Has the culture really changed? Because in 18, we didn't know about the culture, right? Now we know about this monster that Kirby has built down there in Athens, and you would assume that this culture says, nah, we're going to go in there and bang this team out and just move forward. And you would hope at the same time, again, you give Florida State's best, because with all the talk that they've been having, you know, we should have been in the bowl game or in the college football playoffs. We should have been there. Then all of a sudden you get all these guys that opt out. You would hope that maybe Mike Norvell can get his team ready for this game to play against Georgia. But we'll see. What are you expecting? I think that's the biggest key. What are you expecting out of both teams going into this game? Not just a competitive game. Obviously, we hope we get that. But what do you expect to see coming out of it?
I expect to see more of the same from Georgia. I expect to see a more tapped in Georgia team than the one that played in the SEC championship game. I expect them to, you know, be chomping at the bit, because maybe I'm pretty sure it hasn't got as much, attention as the other teams that, you know, may have thought they deserved to be in, or the teams that made in. But I'm pretty sure Georgia feels like they should have been in the top four, even after a loss. You know what I mean? I believe that you have to take care of your business. That's my opinion. But I do still believe they're one of the top four teams. I still think they're the best team in the country. But you have to take care of your business. And I think they want to remind people. And I really think that this staff and the head man would want to hit the ground rolling for 24. You know what I mean? I feel like it's a statement game. I've been seeing clips of new guys practicing already. Like, it's kind of like, yeah, we're trying to go forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, you just kind of detailed a moment ago, Lamar, when you were like, well, Florida State's got, you know, 20 guys that aren't playing and all of that. That makes them kind of dangerous in a way, because, you know, all these guys that have been waiting to play. I mean, you see it sometimes when a backup quarterback comes into a game because the starter gets hurt and the team's been getting beat up, and all of a sudden this guy comes in and he's just happy to be in, and he's loose and he's freewheeling and he starts tossing it around. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but, I don't think people should just – assume like Georgia is all of a sudden going to come in and drop, you know, some 50 burger on FSU. Like, this was still a good secondary with some good pass defense. Like, the pass rush is not going to be there, I don't think, like it was for them this year without Verse and without Fabian Lovett and some of these guys. DJ Lundy, a linebacker, was good when they decided to blitz them. Like, I get that, you know, the star power is maybe not there, but they still have some dudes. Like, Hyke Williams is a five-star wide receiver who Georgia wanted very bad that ended up at FSU. So it's not like they're, you know, rolling a bunch of scrubs out there. This isn't an FCS team. I think for Georgia, the best way to be successful is treat this like the first game of 2024. And that's really what it is from a team makeup standpoint in terms of perception. And you know, the thing for Georgia, like, this is a culture deal, right? Like, they've already come into a spot where, you know, Kamari Lassiter said he's going to play. Ladd McConkey told reporters today that he is going to play. You know, how many snaps those guys play, I don't know. But the fact that they're down there and engaged and continue to be part of the team and continue to, you know, be there instead of at some private training facility getting ready for the NFL draft says quite a lot about their investment in the University of Georgia and in their brothers that are going to take the torch from them in 2024 and beyond, assuming those guys leave. So I think for Georgia, in a way, like, you have already won by going over this disappointment that was losing to Alabama and continuing to keep your team engaged here in the present moment. Like, staying engaged right now and getting the most out of these 15 bowl practices, that does a lot for you. I mean, spring practice is 15 practices, right? Like, making the most out of those practices with these young guys, huge bonus. And then it's a chance to put eyes on some guys that you think might be contributors for you in 2024. And I know Georgia's not playing for the three-peat, but if done right, this game does have a chance to be like a celebration of what Georgia football is and has achieved over the last few years, because it should be a chance for some seniors and some big time contributors to, you know, take some curtain calls and walk off the field with a game in hand. And it should be a chance to get a glimpse of the future of some of this freaky five-star talent that UGA has recruited. And I think, like, those are things that recruits and people, you know, turning on their TVs during the holiday season with nothing else going on, like, you see that, you want to be a part of it because it looks fun and it's going to look different than the vibe and the energy of what you're seeing from all these other non-CFP bowls. So people say it doesn't matter. Every time you play, it matters if you're a competitor. You know, no, it doesn't matter to the national title race, but, like, it matters to perception. It matters to beat a team that you're recruiting against a lot in a border war type situation in Florida State. Like, there are things that matter about this game.
And, you know, Graham, I'm sorry, George, one second. What was interesting to me, what you just said, is that it matters, right? There's a couple things that really do truly matter. There is a perception right now because everyone's fighting the same perception no matter what school you're at. Does college football matter? Does it matter for guys to be locked in? Does it matter for guys to stay at your university? Does it matter for you to build that culture? Does it matter for a lot of different reasons? And Georgia has an opportunity, as being the back-to-back national champion, to show that it still matters. It still matters to a university. It still matters to guys that are on that roster that if they could play, I'd probably go out there on a limb to say right now that Kirby has sat Brock down and said, you know what, there is no way in all God's creation I'm letting you go out there and get injured when you're going to be a top five, top 10 pick in the NFL. There's no reason for it. But he would play. I mean, they would have to hold the kid back, and they probably are holding the kid back from playing. That shows a lot for guys that you're recruiting and trying to bring into your university and trying to figure out if they're the right guy for the university and right guy for your program. That's the first thing that matters. The second thing that really truly matters is like you mentioned as well, Graham, having those guys already on campus, getting those that youth ready for that next level, that environment, which is still your culture, right? We saw that in 18, again, when they lost to Texas, and you had some young guys who were on the roster, some young guys that had committed early, some young guys that were playing early. Going into that next year, they were ready. They were signed up, and they were like, all right, let's go. Let's do what we do. And I think when you bring on the talent that Georgia has brought on with this next recruiting class, which obviously is number one in the nation, with the portal guys that have already jumped, this is a situation for them to actually look and say, you know what? I want to be a part of that national championship team. I see the culture. I see the feeling of what really goes down at Athens. It helps going into that 24 season. And last but not least, you want to see what you got. You want to see what you have in terms of who's really dialed in for that 24 season of the guys that are currently on your roster. Did you pack it in? Did you just basically say, you know what, I'm done with the season. You know, let's go down here, enjoy Florida, get some nice parting gifts and go back and hang out for the rest of the year before we get started for the 24 season. It shows you a lot with a game like this. And to me, it's going to be interesting to see how Georgia really truly comes out, how they play, how effective they are, how crisp they are. Because you mentioned another thing, Graham, and then I'll give it over to George. You said, you know what? You got a kid named what's the kid's name? Brock Glenn. I mean, I don't expect him to go out there and have a Miller Moss day like he had at USC, throw 4 or 6 touchdowns. I don't expect that, but anything can happen, and you don't want that happening on your watch. But it's going to be interesting to see how these guys respond to see, you know what? No, we still want to be dominant. We want to show everybody that we are that number one team in the country that should have been in the playoffs. So we'll see what happens. What do you got, George?
And also, just think about it. When you look at it, you can look at it this way. There's a possibility that by the end of this thing, all of the top 5 teams, you know, could have just – it could be 5 one-loss teams, and you could be one of them. You know what I mean? Like – It kind of evens you out. I know it's a mental thing. You know, you're not specifically you're not the top team, but when you're looking at the next team, the next guy across from you, and you got one loss, they got one loss. It's kind of like, what makes you better than me? You know what I mean? It's like you got one loss too. Yeah, we got one loss. You know, are you really that much better than me? You know what I mean? You're dealing with young kids and impressionable, and this thing could mean a lot moving forward with with their psyche.
I mean, that do you know how many teams in the history of this sport have won a national title? Like, after only losing one game by 3 points. I mean, a lot of teams in this sport have won a national title after losing a game by 14 or 17, you know, and gone on to be the number one team, the last man standing. So you're right. Like, I was thinking last night or the night before, I was back home and my nephew, he's like 7 years old, and he's gotten into like football cards and baseball cards and stuff. And when I was his age, I was into them. And so he was like, well, can I see your old cards? And I went and found them. And I was going through like this box of stuff that's got, you know, old game tickets. And like one of the things I found in there was a ticket to the 2002 SEC championship, like the stub from that game, and some commemorative magazine and stuff. And like, I was thinking about at that time, that 13-1 season that you guys had, George, like that was the first time Georgia football in the history of the program had ever won 13 games ever. Yep. And it was, you know, the greatest Georgia football season that I had ever seen. And it was the greatest, you know, season that Georgia had in a really, really long time. Like, this situation that Georgia's in, I know that they're not in the college football playoff, but you are playing to put a 13-1 season on the back end of a 15-0 and a 14-1. Like, that's historic stuff. You know, you're playing basically to have what, 44 wins, I think. Is that right? No, 42 wins in 3 years in college football, where you play a 12-game season. You know, like, you only get 12 guaranteed games a season, and you have a chance to win over 40 in a three-year span. Like, that's significant. That's historically significant. And, you know, I think that gets lost in all of the idea of, like, it doesn't matter unless you're playing for a championship. This sport didn't have a playoff until a decade ago. And, you know, now we're expanding that because we've seen the public fall under this, like, false perception that now nothing matters but the playoff games. But that's bullshit. It is. Like, this sport, every game matters if you really care about and understand college football. Recruiting perception matters. Like, all this stuff matters. Internal dynamics matter. Some of these guys on Georgia's team still can, you know, probably still have to make up their minds on transfer portal type stuff. And if they have a good experience or a bad experience in this game and the lead up to this game, that might have some deterministic nature on what they do afterwards. So all this stuff matters. It's just, you got to understand the nuance between whether or not, you know, it affects the national title. This sport has been great for a long time, like a long, long time. And, you know, being an Orange Bowl champion is something that, you know, people would have celebrated for an entire offseason not that long ago, you know?
Like, can you imagine the Rose Bowl not meaning anything?
That's where we're at, and it's crazy. It does mean something.
Like, people used to, they'd kill to go to the Rose, to play in the Rose Bowl. Like, it was a big deal when those teams like Michigan and Wisconsin and all the Ohio State, those guys go to the Rose Bowl because that's what, you know, that game meant to the Big Ten. And it's just odd. It's crazy that we're here. I enjoy the playoff. You know, I think it's I think it can more times than not be the true denominator of, you know, who's the best. You know what I mean? But still, I wish it didn't take away from the excitement of the other bowl games. You know what I mean? What it meant to people, and people still watching. You know, I see my Twitter timeline and whatnot. People still watching these games, but I don't want people to diminish what they actually meant. Like, we know, like, we're of a certain age to where we know what these bowl games really mean.
I mean, Michigan is the winningest program in the history of the sport, and they've won like one national title since the 60s, since segregation basically like hit the entire sport. Well, it's true. Like, they have, right. You know,
that's what's hilarious.
But they're so storied because of like Bo Schembechler and all this stuff. And all of that is, you know, like, because what was celebrated is that they won, you know, 11 Big Ten titles, I think, while he was the coach there. And that meant they went to 11 Rose Bowls. And that's where you wanted to be on New Year's Day, was out in sunny Pasadena watching the sunset hit the San Gabriel Mountains. Like, that was, you know, the pinnacle stage of the sport, or one of them. You know, like, for us growing up in SEC country, it was, you wanted to be in New Orleans on New Year's Day at the Sugar Bowl. Mm-hmm. And so, like, being in Miami to play a bowl game, I mean, I was talking to my dad about it over Christmas, because, I mean, he's a huge Georgia fan, and he's been to, you know, all these playoff games over the last couple of years. And he was like, I feel bad almost that I'm not going, because these kids, like, they deserve a good crowd to be there to root them on, especially after all they've achieved over the last couple of years. He was like, it's hard to justify it after, you know, spending what people have spent to go all the way out to LA and to go all these CFP games over the last 2 years. But like, you know, he was talking about when Georgia played Michigan down there in Miami in the CFP a couple years ago, and you're just like, it was a great experience, like being down there for New Year's, awesome experience. We had a blast. That stadium is really nice. It's cool to get in and out of, like, you know, it's all enjoyable and fun. And so, yeah, the idea that, you know, it is the should have been there bowl, but like, I don't know. I've seen a whole lot of Georgia football in my life, and I've seen the vast majority of seasons end in much shittier places than Miami in the Orange Bowl. You know,
I've been in the Music City Bowl before.
Yeah,
it was not fun. I did not know Nashville got that cold. It was.
What gifts did they give you, George? What gifts did they give you?
I don't even remember.
Was that against Boston College?
Boston College and William Green and Marco and Colombo. Ryan, right? And they,
No,
that's way before Matt.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they beat us, like, because nobody wanted to be there. I remember going, we went to practice one day and it was so cold and windy and freezing that we didn't even practice. We got like huddled up. We might have ran like two plays. Coach Rick was like, hit the buses, like we'll finish this in the ballroom at the hotel. Like, it was just trash. Like, the Orange Bowl, man, come on. Grow up, you know, remember seeing that trophy with the oranges in it and mm-hmm. all of that stuff. It meant something, and I'm glad that it seems like it's coming from the head down, that this seems like an important game to Georgia. You know, they don't care who's not playing on the other side. That's somebody else's problem. That ain't our problem. Nice. You know, that's your problem. You know, we got our troops. You know what I mean? So, and we're going to go on down there and try to win it, you know. And it's important because it is. Anytime you hit that field, it's important. You know what I mean? It is it's a brutal game. It's a dangerous game. And it takes a lot of grit, a lot of emotion, a lot of, you know, fortitude to play this game. So, you know, tell the guys that, you know, strap it up and got to hit another grown man going full speed, that it doesn't matter. Try that.
Well, you know what, Jordan, I'm going to switch gears real quick because I know we have been talking about it matters. But are we going to get to the point, fellas, where, and stay with me on this, where it doesn't matter? And I'm saying it from this standpoint. You got 20 guys that opted out. Look at Florida State right now. 20 guys that have either opted out or injured and they can't play. Now we're moving to the college football playoffs where there's going to be 12 teams. You're still going to have guys that are sitting there, maybe they're the 10th team in, 11th team in, 12th team in, and they're sitting there gauging themselves, saying, you know what, I'm the number one receiver in the country. I'm the number one DB in the country. I'm the 10th team. We're getting ready to play number one Georgia. Oh, my ankle's a little, you know, it doesn't feel right. My agent's telling me now that, you know what, maybe you don't want to play. You already got enough NIL money. You don't have to play. Are we going to get to that point where guys truly might opt out and say, you know what, I don't have to play unless I'm really one of those top four teams? And I shouldn't play because my agent's telling me not to play. My family's telling me not to play. And there is no way in all of God's creation am I going to ruin my opportunity to be top five, top 10 pick by maybe tearing an ACL or something happening if I don't really have to. Especially when you look at something like a Florida, like this game here. Florida State doesn't have their number one quarterback, their number two quarterback. They're down to their freshman quarterback. Am I going to go out there and catch passes from this dude and maybe risk everything? Or are we getting to that stage in college football now? Or do you think somehow, some way, it's going to, I don't know, tradition is going to keep it going? Some type of regulations are going to come in where they stop guys from opting out. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I don't know if the psychology of the athlete has gotten to that point yet. I think everybody, I know myself, and I don't think I'm that unique. I always felt like I had a chance. Like, if there's a game to be played, we got a chance. especially, and you have to really think that way if you're a top 12 team. You know, and there are going to be years where the separation isn't that great. Graham might know who's 10, 11, 12 like right now?
Like Missouri.
Like 9. Who's like 9? So you mean to tell me that Missouri right now. Won't scare anybody?
Well, Missouri's 9. So 11 would have been Ole Miss. So like Ole Miss would be playing Michigan, which I think they would, you know, they'd get up for. And Penn State would be playing Washington, you know, like it would go like that. Well, I guess that's not including the byes, but I mean, I think it's going to happen, man. I do, like, in some – depending on how you want to define the word opt out, like Jackson Smith and Jigba opted out of the end of Ohio State season last year. Mm-hmm. Like he could have possibly played in that Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl playoff game, depending on who you ask. And he didn't, which is fine. I don't know. That's his right. But like, I don't know. It's just going to depend. I think you'll see some guys be more careful than others. I mean, a lot of people wanted Jalen Carter to not play the rest of Georgia's season last year. A lot of people wanted Brock Bowers to be done this past year. I think it's just going to be – it's going to depend on the guy. But, you know, I get the logic on some level. Like, if I was some stud G5 quarterback that was the 12 seed and I got to go play, you know, 1 seed Georgia – do I really want that smoke? You know, like, do I want to get hit 17 times? I don't know, but I mean, it's going to tell people a lot, though. It's going to tell people in the NFL.
George
knows this better than I do. Like, that would tell me a lot in the front office if some guy who's a dude who's, you know, a cornerstone of a team opts out of a playoff game, an elimination game.
Right. You know, I brought up Drake May. I mean, obviously he hasn't opted out of anything. I'm not saying he has, but that's a good example. A team like North Carolina.
Well, right? He did opt out. Yeah, they
played. Yeah, but there you go. I mean, there's really no real reason, no rhyme or reason for him to play. He's going to be a top 5 pick, theoretically, right? Caleb Williams, the same thing. He opted out. He's theoretically going to be the number 1 or number 2 pick in the NFL draft. But let's say they are the 12th team. A team like North Carolina would maybe come in at like number 12, right? USC, theoretically, with a good team and a great quarterback, shouldn't be number 10 or, you know, 11 or 12. They should be in the top 8 at least. But there's going to be those situations. And you're wondering, and I was wondering, I was sitting there thinking about it today. I said, you know what? Are we going to come down to it? It's going to be interesting moving forward, fellas, because I don't want to get to that point where that's what they've been going for, right? Everybody's been looking for this big college football playoff where it goes now from 4 teams to 12 teams, and you really got some good games, and now these games really matter, right? Now the Rose Bowl really matters. Now the Orange Bowl really matters if it's not the championship game in that city. It really matters that Penn State's playing, I don't know who they're playing this week.
Ole Miss.
Ole Miss, that matters, right? But if your number one running back decides to sit out because he's going to be a top 5, top 10 pick, does it really matter? I don't know, because it decreases their chances of winning. And it decreases your opportunity of seeing a bona fide top-flight college football game with that pageantry, that excitement, and those bragging rights. Because that's really what it comes down to for us fans. It's the bragging rights. It comes down to it for the players as well. You know, Big Ten versus SEC. You know, like you were mentioning, Rose Bowl. Pac-12 against the Big Ten. It was bragging rights. But now I think all those things will kind of go away unless you're one of those teams that are playing – for the national championship, or you're in the Final Four, you're one of the top 4 teams, and those guys don't necessarily opt out. I think we really get to that major issue when you have guys that will opt out off of those top 4 teams because the NIL money is so big and they don't have to play. They're like, hey, screw it, I've already done my time here.
Well, I mean, the thing I would say is this. I think having these playoffs be, you know, multiple rounds now, they'll start much earlier. You know, they'll start on December 20th. Like, if you talk about between a conference championship game and December 20th, that's 2 weeks. that's not the same as a month-long layoff. So I think it's easier to keep players engaged during that. The other thing I'd say about the NIL money, I was at a Christmas party back home in North Carolina, and I was hold on, I'm going somewhere here. Trust me, I promise. I'll bring it home. I was at a holiday party.
Big right? money.
I couldn't start the show, George. He had big money. He's big
Hey, get us some players, Graham.
I'm not some guy, but I know some guys. All right. But I was at this holiday party, and there was a family, acquaintance there who is an A1 level booster at a Power 5 athletic program. I don't want to give it away, but. Anyways, we got into a conversation about football and all that. And he was, just kind of casually was like, well, I got a call from, the school, the collective or whatever, a couple weeks ago. And they said, hey, we're raising 50 grand. And I was like, well, what for, And he said, well, we got this starting lineman. And, the kid has probably an NFL future. He's not a surefire NFL guy. He will play professional football. He's not a first, second round kind of guy. But the kid, basically came to the school and they're not playing in like a big bowl game, but they're playing in a bowl game. And he just came to the school and said, I will play, but I'm not doing it unless I get 50 grand. So the school went and raised 50 grand and gave him 50 grand. And I think that's what's coming. And I'm fine with that, man. Like, give these kids playoff bonuses, give them bowl bonuses. If they're that good to where you're willing to pay them 50 grand, amen, then they deserve it.
It's weird you said that. I was thinking that, and I thought I was thinking ridiculous.
Nah, I mean, that's happening already. Clearly, it's happening.
I thought I was thinking ridiculous. That is, listen, I was thinking when we were talking, first started talking, that crossed my mind. I was like, how can we get these kids to still play, and listen, I'm with it. I've always looked at, before NIL and all this stuff came up, we would have these discussions about who being paid you already get an education, this, that, another. No, this football is these kids' trade. Mm-hmm. If you got a 17-year-old that can fix your carburetor, change your tire, change your alternator, you think he wants some books for that? Or he wants some cash for being up under your hood, what I mean? Because that's his trade, it's a skill that has a value. These kids that can, take a slant to the house, that's his trade. It's a skill that has value. And if he wants to get paid for it, I'm all for it. Who doesn't get paid for what they, their skills, that's what skills are for, that'll be used, to get ahead one way or the other, they have a purpose.
Yes, and just to piggyback on that thought, these bowl games are television products. That's what they are. They are there because, they're money, and it's because I'm sitting on my ass on, December whatever it is, 28th, and there's a game on TV right now, and I am watching it while we record this because it's college football and it's on. If you want a solution to the NIL problem and the opt-out problem, then let the people who are producing television show, which is what this is, it's a television show. If they want the best show, then they can fork up the money to put those players on the field, especially if we are talking about a non-CFP game. I mean, just because I think it's harder to motivate the kids to play in these non-CFP games, those are the bowls that should be saying, hey, Drake May, guess what? We're going to pay for a fat insurance policy, and we're gonna give you 150 grand and we're gonna hype this up as come watch the next number one pick. And people will, and they'll make their money back. They'll more than make their money back. So that's where it'll go, and that's probably where it should have always been going. But I think eventually that, you know, the burden, at least for the postseason, will probably be taken off these schools, and it'll be put onto the CFP, because the CFP is not the NCAA. You know, that they can, they are a private, they're a company just like any other company, and they can go and do whatever they want with their money. And if they want the best product, they'll get the best players.
You know, it's interesting that before we go further, you know, I think it's going to have to come down to like what you guys have already talked about. You start looking at some college football games and bowl games. If they say, hey, you know what? Each kid gets 5,000, each kid gets 10,000. You're talking about $850,000 for an 85 scholarship, you know, 85 kids on the scholarship team. They can pony that up. I mean, how much money are they already giving these networks to be the lead sponsor and things like that? They can pony that up, and each kid will get their money in that. And then that way these guys can continue to play, and not mainly for us, but for themselves. I mean, take some burden off of themselves in terms of, well, I don't want to sit out because I don't want to get injured. Take some of the burden off of them and allow them to, you know, have that opportunity to still play, but also compensating them for doing so. Because I think it does take away from the entire environment, their involvement with their team. I mean, you know, some of these guys want to be out there playing. They want to be out there with their teammates, but someone's in their ear saying, you know what, man, no, it's not worth it unless you're getting paid for it. Because on the next level, you're going to get paid. So you might as well get paid for it now. So maybe that'll change some things when, you know, if they come around and they adjust things, so to speak, to allow these guys to make something off of it.
Right. I mean, look, the Music City Bowl pays their teams $5,700,000. Like, that's, you know, that's not a little amount of money. I'm trying to see what the Orange Bowl paid last. Citrus Bowl, $8.2 million. Yeah, I mean, some of these contracts aren't public, but I mean, in the past, like these CFP games, I mean, I think the number is like $16 million.
Yeah,
that's what I've heard in past years. So
that's a good bit of change. But hey, before we get to the college football playoff predictions, I got, you know, something I got to bring up, because we talked about our portal guys last week before you came on this week. So on last week's show, but hey, we got some trolling to do. It's the troll of the week. Trevor Etienne commits to UGA, leaves Florida. I think it's so hilarious, man. You see all the memes that are going out, you know, that people open up their Christmas gifts and they have an Etienne shirt, and all of a sudden he's playing for Georgia, man. What are your thoughts on Trevor Etienne, first of all, switching to Georgia? And second, what are your thoughts on a guy going from a rival school to another school?
I mean, I think Trevor Etienne is he's that dude. Right. Like, he's a home run hitter kind of back. We've seen him, you know, take it to the house 70 in SEC games. Georgia, look, Kendall and Dejan was a great tandem. I'm not knocking those guys, but they weren't home run hitters quite in that way of, you know, they're good. Like, we're going to get you 12, 16 chunk yards. You know, Kendall hit some home runs against Ole Miss, right? Like, he took some long runs out, but Etienne is a little bit of a different animal, just in terms of his yards after contact for the last 2 years combined is over 4 yards, 4 yards after contact per an attempt. And what you saw at times from Edwards and Milton last year, or this past season, was like, you know, there were games where one of them would be up in close to like 3.5. But against better defenses, they were more often around 2. And if your offensive line is not getting a push, which there are times in a game, your offensive line isn't blowing everybody back every single play, especially in the SEC. So there's times where those guys are only getting 2 yards, you know, on first and 10. The difference between second and 8 and second and 6 is light years in terms of play calling, in terms of what you're comfortable doing in your offense. And I think that cost Georgia at times in 2023, especially in the Alabama game. Like, you saw that sort of played out. So having a guy that can kind of go get his own, even when the blocking's not all the way there, it's a big difference maker. And people say backs don't matter, but in college football, they sure as hell do. And having a guy that can turn, you know, first and 10 into second and six without too much help, it makes your offensive coordinator's life much, much easier. And so I think ETN he'll be a huge add for Georgia. If Branson Robinson can get healthy before 2024, like, that has potential to be the best running back duo that we've seen in Athens in quite a while. You know, like, Georgia had Swift, but like Harrion, you know, good player, not a future NFL starter, right? Like, ETN and Robinson can both be future NFL starters. They can go, you know, a long way. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see sort of how the pairing shakes out next to him, because the thing that he also brings that will be a big deal is just receiving out of the backfield. And, you know, Georgia, they did some things with Dejan Edwards at times this year, but like, just having a guy that you can flip it over to in the flat that, you know, is going to go do what Kenny McIntosh did in 2022, it stresses defenses. It opens up run lanes, you know, on other downs, because that middle linebacker, that inside linebacker, is like always thinking about following that motion man. And so you can do a lot of interesting stuff with two back sets, and you can pull a guy out of the box because they have to respect that receiving threat. And then there's times where, you know, you have a chance to throw a legit go route for a touchdown, like Georgia did with James Cook at times and the couple of years that, you know, he was a feature back for him. So we'll see it. Like, we'll see it all play out. And I think it'll add a much needed dimension to the offense. I'm really curious who the sort of 1A, 1B, you know, to go with ETN is going to be, because like, even if Georgia can't get a fully healthy Branson Robinson, like, can they get Roderick Robinson or Andrew Paul, two other really big backs, to sort of be the thunder to his lightning? And then you've got Frazier coming in. You've even got Dwight Phillips Jr., who, like, I don't think is going to be an every down back for Georgia, but those guys can hit home runs too. Like, those are kind of, you know, guys where like, you give them a crease, they'll go 80 on your ass in a hurry. And I think if Georgia can sort of put that into, just sprinkle that into the recipe a little bit, you know, give them four carries a game and maybe one hits, it gets really confusing to deal with that. And Carson Beck, future first round NFL quarterback, and London Humphreys, and all these weapons, right? Like, it starts to stack up and become a really big headache. And I think Georgia will have a top five offense in college football next year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I love the pickup. What he brings is that home run hitting aspect, right? I mean, you just talked about it. We haven't had that in Athens in a long time. That guy that can take it 80 yards immediately. But one thing you mentioned was the Kenny McIntosh aspect, the James Cook aspect, the guy that's able to slip out of the backfield, take that pass, and maybe go 40, 50 yards. People forget Brock Bowers isn't going to be there next year. That is a whole nother element that this offense has really been built around. Yes, we got an Oscar Delp. We got a bevy of tight ends that are going to continue to be tight end you right now, but nobody's Brock Bowers. Nobody is that dude. So when he demanded one guy, two guys, three guys focused on him, now you're not going to have that as a safety valve for Carson Beck. Now Carson Beck's going to have to use the entire field. But when you got a guy that can maybe demand more attention than normal as a running back, that can come out of the backfield, that can, you know, maybe he's taking a run up the middle, maybe he's coming out of the backfield, taking, you know, on a wheel route, that opens up a lot more for your tight ends. It opens up something on the backside, right? When for some of your receivers as well. I'm excited by it. What I'm more excited about it is that you took him from Florida. That's mm-hmm. that's the excitement, right? I mean, again, not that Florida was building anything back up. I mean, heck, we saw that their signing day was basically a failure. I mean, they had so many guys flip that day. I mean, I kind of felt bad for them. I mean, they had so many guys flip, right? But at the same time, when you are able to build while another team is in attrition, I mean, that's a slam dunk. And I think adding ETN is just – he's going to add another element to this offense. It's, you know, that's a whole other aspect that Georgia has not seen in a long time. And as you mentioned, you know, also adding a guy like Phillips, also adding a guy like Frazier. Heck, Frazier is basically ETN. So that's a guy he's going to learn from. He's going to – you could take ETN out of the game and Frazier comes in. I don't think you miss a beat. I mean, obviously, he's a freshman. He's going to have to learn. He's going to have to learn the SEC style of game. But still, I mean, you could take him out, put him in, and they're interchangeable. And I don't think you miss anything. So I'm excited by it. It's a big-time pickup for Georgia, you know. We haven't really hit the portal so hard. You already mentioned Humphreys. You already mentioned ETN. Not a lot of guys that have come in through the portal as other teams have had massive overhaul through the portal, but these are two major pickups that Georgia had picked up here in the portal. Hey, before we get up out of here, I know we got to talk about this because some of these games, at least the first week's games are going to go on. College football playoff predictions. What are your thoughts, man? I know you're watching college football right now as we're talking, but what are your thoughts on these two games coming up? You got Michigan, Alabama. You got Washington, Texas. You've been high on Washington since day one of the 23 season. Got to give you kudos on that. You said watch Washington. Here they are, number three. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Michigan, Alabama will be more of that kind of old school slugfest. You know, I think it'll be a line of scrimmage football game. I've never been a believer in J.J. McCarthy. I think he's, you know, toolsy, but I don't think he's a great decision maker. And, like, Alabama's DBs are going to have Michigan's wide receivers in hell. So I think Michigan is going to struggle to score in that game. I think Alabama will also struggle to score in stretches. I think the legs of Milroe, probably that added dynamic – and just, you know, I think Bama's receivers match up better with Michigan's secondary than vice versa. So I think Bama will win that game, but I think it'll be a competitive football game. Like, I don't think that they're, you know, scoring into the 30s on them. I think it'll be something like a 28-20 kind of football game that doesn't really feel that close, maybe. Washington, Texas, I'm very excited for because I think that is going to be – I mean, like, you got first-round NFL wide receivers all over the field, multiple on both sides. You got Penix and his arm and what that can do. Ewers, I'm not as high on, but, like – I will say when they went on the road to Alabama in their biggest game of the year against the best team that they played, mm-hmm. he hit multiple deep shots on that secondary, and that's a good secondary. So I think it's going to be fun. I think you're going to see a lot of high scoring. Like, I think that could be – I think that game could have some of the vibes of, like, some of the Clemson-Alabama playoff games that we saw, or even Georgia-Ohio State last year. Like, I think that's going to be, like, a 40s – kind of game, high 30s. I've rode with Washington all the way, so I can't get off the bandwagon now. So I'm going to say that they pull that out 42-38. And then, you know, we get a Bama Washington national title, which I think will be fun. I think that could be like a really good national matchup. So that's my thought.
Interesting. I'm actually going to go Michigan on this. And here's my reason for Michigan.
All right.
Because the NCAA has already backed them the entire way. There's no reason in the world why Michigan should be there. There's no reason why Michigan should be in the college football playoffs. They should have been suspended pending, you know, investigation. There's no reason for them to be there. So if they're there, they're there for a reason. Not only that, they got film on everybody. I mean, I'm sure they got film on Bama. I mean, they probably, you know, they still got film coming up, you know, from somebody, from somewhere. I have no idea. I got Michigan winning that game. And not only that, I think I mean, Michigan does have a good offensive line. They're big. They're massive. They played well all year. You know, a lot of people have said, was it Georgia's offensive line? Is it Michigan's offensive line? Is it Notre Dame? Who's got the best offensive line? They got a very good offensive line. And I really do believe that given the time that these guys have had to prepare, one, I think Nick would probably prepare his team much better than Harbaugh. But at the same time, Harbaugh's got film. He's got everything he needs. I think that they'll be prepared in this game. They have experience from being there, losing to Georgia, obviously, losing to TCU. I think they have an axe to grind. And I don't think that Alabama is truly that team that most people think Alabama is because they beat Georgia. Georgia beat themselves in the SEC championship. I don't think Alabama and Milroe are able to overcome what Michigan is going to throw at them. I got Michigan winning 27-23, but I'm like yourself. I think the game of the week, the game of the year, really could come down to Washington and Texas. I think that's going to be a shootout. It's interesting that you said 42-38?
Yeah.
I'm actually going 38-34. 4-point spread between the two, but I'm going Washington. I think that even though Penix drives me crazy. I can't stand left-handed quarterbacks, bro. I don't know what it is. They drive me crazy. They just drive me crazy. I love David Green. Don't get me wrong. But left-handed quarterbacks crazy. But I just believe that Washington has just that it factor this year, man. I don't know what it is that they have going on up there. I don't think Texas is really there yet. I think that they played in the Big 12. Big 12 is not as ready for big time ball yet. I just don't see it. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be an exciting game. I'm looking for Washington to come out of that game 38-34. It's going to be explosive, though. I think it's going to be fun, back and forth. And I wouldn't be surprised either way who comes out of that game. I just think it's going to be explosive, back and forth, big-time plays. You already mentioned the receivers, big-time receivers on both sides. It's really going to come down to the defenses, who makes a big play to on a big-time stop in that game. So I got Michigan, Washington, national championship. I don't want to see it, you know, two Big 12 or Big 10 teams in the future, but it is what it is. Hopefully an SEC team comes out of there, whether it's Alabama or – I hate to say Alabama – or Texas.
But we'll see.
Yeah, man. But, hey, that's it. You have anything else, man, to go kind of talk about?
Do you have a prediction for Georgia, Florida State? I feel like we got to give some.
Jeez.
It's an uneducated – like, dude, I've been trying to write my preview.
That's a tough game.
I don't know what to say about it because none of the numbers or anything hold any weight with all these opt-outs that FSU has.
That's what's so crazy about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say – okay, let's put it this way. I think we see some explosive plays from guys that we're hoping to see explosive plays from. Everybody's looking and waiting to see an Anthony Evans. I'm expecting to see an explosive play from him. I'm looking to see some explosive plays on defense. I'm looking to see we didn't even talk about Mykel Williams. I'm hoping that they actually allow him to come off the edge and really actually wreak havoc, to really be a pass-rushing defensive end / edge / whatever you want to call him and let him actually be who he is meant to be. What we have seen over the past year, I'd say this year, is a guy setting the edge a lot of times, not necessarily utilizing his skill sets the way he wants to utilize them. But Foss is back. But who knows? We don't know what we're going to get. But I'm hoping to see some of these guys make some of those splash plays in this game. With that being said, I'm probably going to say Georgia 42-13. I'm going to say a blowout.
I think I'm sort of in that neighborhood. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because, like, you know, we were talking about earlier, I think the FSU secondary is probably the best of the units that remain. Very curious to see, like, I know Kendall is playing. I'm assuming I don't have any reason to believe Dejan is not. Curious to see, though, if, like, we get a little – flash or taste of one of these young running backs, maybe Roderick Robinson or Andrew Paul. Like, both of those dudes look good against Ole Miss late in that game. I think Georgia is going to do their thing on offense and pass the ball, but like they should be able to run the football pretty regularly on Florida State in this game. And so like I think they will. Like we talked about earlier, this has a chance to be a celebration of the Georgia football program. So like that looks like a lot of dudes making a lot of different plays. I think we'll maybe see some of these young receivers on offense. I'm interested to see, like, does Lawson Lucky make a play or two? Because I think that's big for 2024 to sort of pair him with Delp and have that threat still. I think he maybe has the higher ceiling from a receiving big play kind of standpoint. And then on defense, like, I want to see Daniel Harris. I want to see, you know, some of these young bucks in the secondary maybe come out and take a spin. Like, or, you know, I think Georgia should be able to rotate against this quarterback. Georgia should be able to put pretty much anybody in there, you know, three deep at boundary corner out there and be totally fine. So maybe they'll do that some. I like Georgia to score into the 30s, well into the 30s. I'm going to say like 38 to I like 13 as well. Lamar, that's sort of been the number I've had in mind for FSU.
What you got, Big G?
Thinking we're all in, we're in sync. I had to do a show earlier this morning with CJ Wilson. He does some stuff for Florida State, and that was my prediction was 38-17 Georgia. I think that's and I think it's kind of conservative, but I have to be a little conservative because just not knowing who's going to play, how long they're going to play, how long they want to keep Beck out there, who's going to back him up. This is probably going to be what Gunner is. Gunner backing him up. You know, mm-hmm. when are they going to go with Gunner? You know, just how much, just who and how long they're going to play these guys. So 38-17, still enough of a beat down, still kind of conservative. So we'll see. And, you know, Florida State still has a nice piece of their defense still playing. Their issue is going to be, you know, offensively, you know, who they still have in the fold. But, you know, they're still going to have some of their pieces on defense playing.
What did CJ go with in terms of his prediction? Did he give you
one? He wasn't very hopeful. I can't remember specifically, but – I think he probably said like 7 points or so, or that they were gonna score. Like he didn't have faith in the offense of Florida State at this point with so many people missing. So it's gonna, you know, hopefully it turns out that way.
You know what we were talking about before you came on, the college football playoffs. So we gave our prediction. Ram is going Alabama. He's also going Washington. I went Michigan and Washington. Who were you going with out of those top four teams that are still, you know, still left in the college football playoffs? Mm. What are your thoughts? That's and tough. If you'll even watch. I mean, so you got some Georgia fans.
I want to see. I want to see it.
Yeah, I want to see it.
So. And I'll watch 22 Roaches play football. So, you know, I haven't watched a lot of football. Shoot, this holiday season, I've just been busy, man. I didn't realize the other day was Sunday. I didn't watch any of the pro games and haven't watched any bowl games. Hmm. No, haven't watched any bowl games. But I want to watch these for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough one, Lamar. Washington's so explosive on offense. You know, defense, you know. Which is, if you've been watching football the last, you know, few years, you know, it's kind of, they typically have been putting out a lot of prospects on defense.
Yeah. Red zone roulette. It's really like, I think that's what it is for them. Like against Oregon, they gave up a lot of yards, but then they clamped down in the red zone and forced field goals. And that probably has got to be the plan against Texas, I think too.
Right. So, Who? What do I want to go with? I think I'm going to go Washington. I think I'm going to go Washington. I'm going to go Washington. I'm going to go Washington 31 to 21. 31 to 31, 21, Washington. Now this is going to be the one. Bama versus Michigan. I feel like these are two teams that are going to try to do the same things to each other.
Trenches battle.
Yeah. Which team can open it up, though? That's going to be the question. Which team can open it up? And I do not know. What I think has the possibility of happening, though, is the way Bama looked against Georgia in the trenches. Mm-hmm. I like them. So the last time we saw Michigan face that real trench work, that was down there in the Orange Bowl versus the Dogs, and it was not pretty. You know what I mean? So I like Alabama in this one, as much as I hate to say it. I like Alabama. I don't think it's gonna be high scoring. I think it's gonna be maybe, you know, call it, you know, 24 to 14, Bama.
Ooh, okay. So you and Graham went Alabama.
Yeah. What was you guys' scores?
Graham said 28-20 Bama, and I went 27-23 Michigan. I just think Harbaugh got too much tape. Let's just be honest. Let's throw it out there. He got too much tape.
Man's got the plays. Stop.
He got the plays, man. You know, I just think he learned from Kirby. He's not going to sit there and allow Milroe to just sit back in the pocket and make some of these throws that he normally would not do without being pressured. Every team has been scared of him since he's been going off, you know, running the 150 yards for this game, 120. But when you pressure him, he is visibly off. And I'm not saying Michigan's that defensive juggernaut that can do that, but you can't let that kid sit back in the pocket for 5, 6, 7 seconds. You're not going to be able to cover anybody for that.
Right. I just think, you know, 24 points. What did I say? 24-14? I think 24 points is doable by Alabama. And I just don't know if Michigan's going to score over that 24 points. Michigan has, you know, the secondary. I don't know. Like Michigan. I mean, not Michigan. Alabama has the secondary. I think they win that matchup. Michigan receivers and quarterback versus Alabama secondary. I think Alabama wins that matchup. You know, I think that's going to be the defining, you know, part of that game. So we're going to see, man.
Inside, I want somebody to put Harbaugh, you know, in a lunchbox, in a locker, just shove him in the locker. For real, I want somebody to knock him out of college football. I don't want it to be Bama.
I will say that.
That's what we're dealing with.
You know?
Yeah. I don't want Bama to have any satisfaction.
Hauberg can't walk it off. Like that would be terrible. If Harbaugh walks it off, he is going to be suspended for the entire season next year, is what people who know what apparently is coming down the pipe with this whole investigation. Yeah,
I was on the
impression. So he's gone, man. Over. No, the NCAA still hasn't given out their penalty. Just the Big Ten.
Oh, okay.
There's still a whole bunch of shit to fly on that, and I think the reality is that he is going to try to get out of Dodge after this season and go to the NFL or go anywhere, but I don't think he's going to be at Michigan next year, and neither does Michigan, from what I understand. This is it. But you can't let Darth Vader win at the end of the movie. You know what I mean? I am tired of Alabama.
Isn't Darth a Nick?
Well, that's true. That's true. But I mean, that's the other thing, man, is like some people that are in the know with Bama that I'm friends with, like, they think if Bama wins this whole thing that Nick is done, that he will hang it up. Like, the,
you no, know, this no way. Be the end. No way. No way.
I think he wants to go out on top. And I think, like, I think watching what Kirby did the last couple of years and not winning a title with Bryce Young freaked him out a little bit and you know, kind of made them be like, all right, you know, if I can get another one, then I'm not maybe going to take it as for granted. Like, yes, you do have a pipeline of studs coming up. Like, we know that, you know, they'll continue to bring dudes in, but especially going to this 12 team playoff where, you know, I mean, Bama, let's be honest, bro. If we're going to talk about it, shit. All right. 2017, when they won the national title, they didn't play for an SEC championship. They lost to Auburn last game of the season, didn't win their division, won a national title over Georgia. Same story in, what was it? 20. There was another, like, they've won two titles under Nick where they didn't even win their division. And then, you know, they're in the playoff this year after being, I think, eighth or seventh going into the final weekend. It's going to get harder. And they've gotten a lot of benefit of the doubt, and they deserve that benefit of the doubt. But, like, they've been put into the four-team tournament on two or three instances where nobody but Alabama would have been put in. Now you're going to be in a situation where you're going to be in a 12-team tournament, and you got to go win four games to be the national champion. And that's a whole different ball of wax. And I think if you can walk off and not have to deal with that, walk away from all this portal NIL confusion, you're the undisputed GOAT. Go to the lake house. I mean, I'm sure, or go be on ESPN, go replace Lee Corso. You know, you can do whatever you want, but I could see this being the moment for him.
And you're throwing up something that, is it Harbaugh? Is it Saban?
You know who my perfect scenario is? Washington.
Please. Yes, cares. That's the perfect scenario.
Nobody cares.
With you. Yes.
If Washington wins at all, man, we won't remember who won it like in like a week and a half. And that would be perfect for me.
I would like that.
Not only that, Washington then goes into the Big Ten, and you know, they're able to puff their chest up saying, look at us, we won.
Hey,
Ohio State couldn't do it, Michigan couldn't do it, Penn State couldn't do it. We had to actually come from the Pac-12 to actually win it.
All for it. Let's go Washington. Is it like they like to call themselves dogs? Go dogs then. Go other dogs.
Purple rain, baby. Let's go.
Let's do it.
All right, fellas, man. It's been a good show. I guess we'll see each other after the new year. Hopefully the Dawgs come out with a victory. Hopefully we get what we want. Maybe Alabama goes down. I don't know. Well, Alabama, Michigan, somebody's going to go down, but hopefully Washington's still standing so they actually can carry the flag for Georgia right now. But with that being said, man, you guys got anything else to say before we get out of here?
Man. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year's, man.
Happy New Year's, man. Go Dawgs. Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.